T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Hey guys, Andrew Cuomo. I have with me Melissa DeRosa, Robert Mojica, Jim Mylotras, Gareth Rhodes, Beth Garvey. Let me make a couple of announcements, and then we'll take your questions. Today is day 160. New York did 70,000 tests yesterday, and we are at 1%, and that's great news. 5 New Yorkers passed away. They're in our thoughts and prayers. 579 were hospitalized, 139 were in ICU, and 66 intubated. And those numbers are all about flat. So that is all great news, especially when you're consider what's going on around us. I mean, you have increases not only across the country, but even in our region. So, again, our performance is extraordinary in this sea of spread. Our numbers are great because we're doing what we need to do. The quarantine procedures are all in place, and we're enforcing compliance. Enforce compliance. Local governments still are not doing enough. This is a function for their police department and their health departments, and they have to be more aggressive. I don't know how else to say it. The state has a supplemental task force, state police and the SLA, that is fulfilling the obligation the local governments are supposed to be fulfilling, right? And last night, 14 more establishments were given violations, 3 in the Bronx, 4 in Brooklyn, 5 in Manhattan, 2 in Queens. There's a blackout that happened in Manhattan, 5 o'clock this morning, Upper West Side and Upper East Side. It was about 200,000 outages. The power came back very quickly. Con Ed says that there was a transmission station issue along the East River in Queens, which feeds parts of Manhattan. Con Ed said there was no fire or visible explosion, which there has been in the past. They don't know exactly what it was. They're deconstructing the equipment now to find out exactly what it was. They think it may be tied into problems from the tropical storm, but they're not sure. The outage also briefly halted service on subway lines and Metro North, but the MTA is working to restore that, and by now almost all of the power is back on in those situations. I'm going to send a letter to the congressional delegation with Senate Minority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Assemblyman Carl Heastie that says to our congressional delegation, in this last piece of legislation, it's critical, and we need federal assistance. We need $30 billion over 2 years for the state to meet its obligations, $12 billion for the MTA. Otherwise, there's going to be increases. And Port Authority, if the Port Authority doesn't get funding, you could see a curtailment of construction at LaGuardia or JFK. Construction at LaGuardia and JFK is even more important now than ever before, because that is a significant boost for New York City. And New York City needs a significant boost with all the problems they're experiencing. On schools, today is the deadline to look at the infection rates and make a determination. By our infection rates, all school districts can open. Everywhere in the state, every region is below the threshold that we established, which is just great news. And look, let me say it this way. You look at our infection rate, we are probably in the best situation in the country right now, as incredible as that is. So if anybody can open schools, we can open schools. And that's true for every region in the state, period. Now, every school district has submitted plans to the Department of Health and State Education Department. State Education Department, as you know, is a separate department. It's run by the Board of Regents. I have nothing to do with it. Department of Health has the plans, and if they don't meet, Department of Health can disapprove plans if they're not responsible from a health point of view. There are 749 districts that have to submit plans. Of those 749, 127 districts have not submitted plans to the Department of Health, and 50 of those, an additional 50, are either incomplete on their face or deficient. The Department of Health is going to continue going through the plans over the weekend, and on Monday is going to notify those school districts where it's incomplete or deficient. There may be more than the 50, but it's 50 right now, and notify those school districts who have not submitted a plan. As I said, it's 127 now, but Department of Health hasn't finished their review. They will over this weekend, and they'll make those notifications today and Monday to those school districts. So they are all authorized to open. Again, we're going to watch the infection rate between now and the day that schools open. If there's a spike in the infection rate, if there's a matter of concern in the infection rate, then we can revisit it. But for planning purposes, they can reopen. They then go to step two, right, which is the local school district has to come up with a plan, and they have to deal with their parents and teachers, which is going to be a more complicated issue than I think many of them fully appreciate. I have been deluged with calls from parents and teachers. And there is a significant level of anxiety and concern. And I've said a number of times, these school districts have to be talking to the parents and talking to the teachers, because if the teachers don't come back, then you can't really open the schools. If the parents don't send their students, then you're not really opening the schools. So to facilitate that, I want the school districts to do two things. One, I know where the bulk of the questions are coming from. Set of questions that I have from a policy matter is remote learning and the equity in the remote learning process. We've learned from the experiences we've had during COVID that remote learning can be quite unequal given the demographics and given the circumstances. So I'm going to ask the school districts to post their remote learning plan on how they're going to do remote learning to the extent they are, if they are, in their district. Also, there's been a lot of questions about testing. Most of the plans will say a student comes in, temperature check, and if the student has a temperature, they have to be tested. What does that mean? How is the student tested? Where is the student tested? If there are 20 students who have a temperature on day one, how do you get those students tested? Where do you get them tested? What happens in the interim? Teachers also want to know how a teacher can get a test, and how would that be done? Different school districts have different theories, but that question of testing for students and teachers is a high level of concern. To facilitate that dialogue, I want the school districts to post their quote-unquote testing plan for their school district. So whenever they talk about testing, how will you do that? That's what the parents want to know. How quickly will it be done, et cetera. So that's a second component of the plan that should be posted on the website. And the third, the questions around contact tracing in a school. So if a student tests positive in a class, tests positive. So the student came in, student had a fever, student then got tested. What is the contact tracing for that positive? Do you test the class? If the student goes to a number of classes, how do you do it? And how will the school do contact tracing? Will the school ask the local government to do it? Will the school ask the local health department to do it? But these three areas are the highly questioned areas almost across all school districts. Remote learning, how do you do testing, how do you do contact tracing? So I want the school districts to do just that component of their plan that they then post. So a parent who has questions on one of those three areas, they can go right to those three specific answers rather than wading through the entire district's plan, because some of these district plans are quite lengthy. So I'm asking each school district to post those three components. Second, I'm asking all the school districts to have discussions with the parents. There should be at least three discussion sessions with parents where the parents are given notice. They can be online, however it works for the local school district. But they have to communicate with the parents and explain the plan and answer the questions of the parents. And not every parent can make any one date. So the school district should have three opportunities between now and August 21st. And they publicize them and they say, here are the three dates, and parents can participate online, however they do it. But parents need an opportunity to be heard, and the schools should welcome the opportunity to actually explain the plan. For the Big Five school districts, I'd like them to set up five sessions between now and August 21, just because there are more parents and you want to give parents an opportunity to ask a question. You'll have thousands of parents, so even five is, I don't think, overly exhaustive. And I don't know how many questions you can get to, but the more dialogue, the better. I'm also asking the school districts to set up at least one discussion just with the teachers, where they go through the plan, and everybody is in one conversation, teachers, administrators, and they discuss exactly what is in the plan. And if the teachers have questions or concerns, let's get them aired, and let's get them in a point where everybody is hearing the same thing. So, good news, all schools can reopen. Again, we have the best infection situation in the country. If any state can do it, this state can do it, because we've been smart from day one. We do the masks, we do the social distancing, we've kept that infection rate down, and we can bring the same level of intelligence to the school reopening that we brought to the economic reopening. Our school guidance has been touted as the smartest in the country. Our economic reopening guidance was the smartest in the country. So if anyone can do it, we can do it. But we have been successful because we've been smart, and we have to continue to be smart. And with the school districts, I want those two tasks performed. One, a specific plan by school district online by the end of next week. Here's our testing plan. Here's our contact tracing plan. Here's our remote learning plan, as they define it in their local reopening plan. So here's when we say if a student tests positive, this is how we do testing. When we say a teacher can get testing when they want it, this is how we do it. If a student becomes positive, if a teacher becomes positive, this is how we do contact tracing. To the extent we do remote learning, if they do remote learning, this is how we do it, and this is specifically how we're going to address the equity issues that we encountered the first time. So those three plans, which are components of the overall plan, online, posted, people can read them. Second task, talk to the parents, talk to the teachers. Talk to the parents, talk to the teachers. Three online sessions with the parents between now and August 21, except for the big five school districts. They do five sessions between now and August 21. So parents have an opportunity for their question to be heard, where it's just not numerically impossible. And then a session with the teachers alone. Teachers are invited to the parents' discussions, but teachers alone, because teachers do have a separate set of issues. Teachers are older often, so a session with the teachers, because that dialogue is everything, as I've been saying. This is not really a bureaucratic decision. It's a parental decision.
And your first question comes from the line of Dan Clark. Your line is now open.
Hey, Dan. Good morning. Say something, Dan. Talk to me, Dan. Don't diss me, Dan.
Mr. Clark, your line is now open.
Speak, Dan. Yes, I can. How are you?
Okay. Good morning, Governor. I'm good. How are you?
Good, buddy.
So I have a question for you. It was going through my mind yesterday. And so we saw with the nursing homes that primarily asymptomatic people brought the disease into their nursing homes, and that's how it spread so quickly there. How do we prevent the same thing from happening in schools if we're not testing students and just screening them for symptoms?
Are you a parent or are you a teacher? That is the question. That is one of the top five questions. that I'm asked. And that's what they're going to ask the local school districts. Some school districts have a better answer than other districts, by the way, right? And remember, it's up to the local district to come up with a specific plan. But that is a very big question. In other words, you have some school districts who primarily talk about temperature taking. Temperature taking. And if a first kid has a temperature, then test that child, certainly. But how about the asymptomatic spread, right? Governor DeWine, Ohio, a great guy, and I hope the negative test is the one that holds. But that's an asymptomatic spread. Nursing homes, asymptomatic spread. What happens? How do you detect the asymptomatic spread in a school unless you're doing testing? Because if you're not doing testing, the only way you detect asymptomatic spread is when somebody gets sick. But that is a very good question. And that's a question that the local school districts are going to be asked, I can tell you that, from both the parents and the teachers. The answer is testing. But then the question becomes, okay, what percentage of testing? Who's going to do the testing? Do you have that set up? But that is the conversation. That is a very good question.
Thank you, Governor.
Thanks.
Again, your next question comes from the line of Marina Villanueva. Your line is now open.
Hello, Marina.
Oh, hello. Governor, I was wondering about, there has been some calls from unions and some parents as well about perhaps the need for a statewide policy when it comes to some of these tough questions that, you were just talking about. When it comes to, when to close down, how to deal with contact tracing. So I was just wondering if you think, as back in March, there was some sort of statewide policy about when schools should shut down, as soon as there's been a COVID case, do you think that there's a need for that? And I was also just wondering if you had gotten tested yourself following your trip to Georgia and what was the result of that result?
CARES Act
funding is used for that.
Yeah. I'm negative after the test. The statewide policy is viral infection rate opening and closing. The school districts, 750 school districts in the state, they are very different. They're different sizes, shapes, configurations, communities. And there is no one-size-fits-all. These questions of remote learning, testing, contact tracing, these have to be done district by district because the circumstances are that different district by district. What I want to make sure is they get the information up, and that's why separate plan posted, contact tracing, separate plan, remote learning, separate plan, testing, and get it up and then schedule these discussions to talk it through. But I can't fashion a plan that will work in every school district because they are just too different and the circumstances are too different.
Okay, and when it comes to starting or delaying the start of school, can individual school districts decide if they want to delay the start of school or not, or delay when students can start being brought into the classrooms?
Yeah, we're giving flexibility to school districts. Again, you have, like the phased economic reopening, there was no one-size-fits-all regions were in different circumstances, and we did have different timing for different regions, if you remember. The same is more true with school districts. There's 750 of them. So the geographic footprint is even more refined. And if their plan on remote learning, their plan of in-school, their plan of hybrid, how long do they close their school district if they get a positive, how many positives, what is their schedule, that we leave to them. Thank you very much. Operator?
Yes, sir. Your next question comes from the line of Nick Reisman from Spectrum News. Your line is now open.
Hello, Mr. Nick. Nicholas?
Excuse me, Mr. Reisman. Your line is now open.
Wake up, Nick. Speak. Hit the button. Hit the other button. Hit all the buttons.
Mr. Nick Reisman, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Why don't you try someone else in the meantime, operator?
Yes, Governor.
Oh.
Oh, that got him.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Nick.
Hi. Two questions for you. One, could you clarify what the guidance is on mask wearing and PPE use in schools? Will students and teachers be required to wear masks? I believe there's some discrepancy between DOH guidance and SED guidance on that. And number two, what's the outlook for high school sports? Will high school sports be able to be done safely with or without fans this fall?
Yeah, let me turn that over to Jim Malotras.
Hey, Nick. Thank you, Governor. The rule is that you must wear a mask at all time if social distancing cannot take place or occur. So you have to have a mask with you at all time. And if families or a student does not have a mask, the school district must provide a mask. And we strongly recommend that mask wearing happens in DOH guidelines, even through the course of instruction and other activities through the school day, to ensure the maximum level of health compliance, and that is the DOH guidelines. And on sports, right now there is no interscholastic sports approved yet. That's something that's going to be ongoing discussions for.
I spoke to some school districts, Nick, that want to have students come in and leave before lunch, just because they don't want the lunch situation without a mask. They think the meals are one of the most difficult things to do, because that's basically, you know, indoor dining, if you want to look at it through that lens. So, but anyway, that's a school district by school district, subject to the statewide guidance that Jim talked about.
Your next question comes from the line of Juliet Papa. Your line is now open.
Hi, Governor. How you doing?
Miss Papa, you never call, you never write.
Yes.
Where have you been?
Oh, I've been here and there. But thank you. Anyway, you know what I wanted to ask you? If the health department does not approve the health plans for the particular district or school system, would that prevent the opening of that district?
Yep.
Really?
Yes.
So what would they have to do? Follow up, improve it? And what kind of timeline would they have for that?
Well, the timeline is the day of opening, right? But I gave you the numbers. There's a number who haven't even submitted the plan of the 749, 127. And then 50, it's incomplete. The 50 that are incomplete, they can continue to complete them. The ones that haven't submitted have to submit. What's going to happen, Juliet, is they have to do these discussions with parents and teachers. And minimum of 3 sessions before August 21. And that's going to be the real arbiter of the plan, right? Because if the plan doesn't make sense, the teachers and the parents are going to point it out, I guarantee you. And then a separate session just with the teachers. But Department of Health, starting today, Monday the latest, is going to say to those incomplete districts, you have to put in your plan, otherwise they can't open, period.
Okay. What do you think of the proposal for outdoor learning? Do you think that's advisable, practical? Where are you on that?
You know, again, I want to be a little guarded in my editorial comment on the plans, because if it works for a district, it works. If it works for the parents, it works. If it works for the teachers, it works. Having said that, and since I tend to have an opinion about everything, I think the outdoor learning, look, none of this is perfect, right? If I had said to you any of this 6 months ago, you would have said it's all bizarre. But I think the outdoor learning, you know, you have to deal with the weather to the best you can. But look, it's a lot safer. There's no doubt about that. Indoors is what you want to avoid. And as maybe different as outdoor learning sounds, I think it makes sense to the extent you can do it.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Melissa Russo from WNBC-TV. Your line is now open.
Good morning, Governor Cuomo. Thanks for taking the question.
Hello, Melissa.
So within the city itself, just speaking about New York City now, the infection rate varies significantly. So on a given week, it might be a lot higher in Queens, say, than in Manhattan. Do you think that there needs to be a more hyper-local approach to city schools? For instance, if the rate of transmission hypothetically goes up in Queens, would potentially one borough have to close down, or just the schools in one neighborhood? And then separately, what if the city does everything you're asking, holds its discussions, attempts to address the concerns of teachers, but teachers and their unions still don't feel comfortable coming back? Should they be required to come back?
Two questions. First one first. Again, Melissa, it's up to the school district. My general rule is if it works for those parents and those teachers in that district, then it works. Your point is right. In the plans, they are in the plan, they're supposed to deal with school by school reopening plans. That should be in the plan. It makes your point that a school district in a school in Manhattan is different than a school district in Queens. New York City, you have hotspot zip codes. I think it's even more refined when you say hyperlocal. It's more than a county basis. You have infection rates by zip code. And we have targeted hotspot zip codes. We've done more testing. We've done door-to-door, et cetera, in hotspot zip codes. You know the infection rate in New York City writ large is about 20%. You know the infection rate in some zip codes is about 50%. So you're talking about a very different situation. Should you have a different strategy for those schools in a hotspot zip code? You could argue, yes. I know that I've spoken to a number of teachers who make just that point in New York City. Their school is in a hotspot zip code. You're bringing kids from hotspot zip code homes. There should be additional precautions than in a different zip code. So I'm sure that's something that will come up in the city discussion. What was your second part of the question?
What if the city does everything you've asked them to?
but the teachers still don't feel comfortable coming back. Should they be required?
Look, Melissa, you need two things to open up the schools. Students and teachers. Those are the two essential elements of the formula. The students you can't force back. That's going to be up to the parents, and that's why you need to have the parents sign off, and that's the discussion groups, et cetera. Teachers, you don't want to get into a – I don't think you want to get into a legal battle with the teachers, right? I don't think that's not the nature of the profession or the nature of our relationship. Teachers have to feel safe. They can't teach if they don't feel safe. You know, you're not going to order a teacher into the classroom and say, do your job, even though you don't want to be here and you feel like your health may be threatened. They're not going to be able to teach in that environment. And that's not the relationship we have with our teachers. So the teachers have to agree to go back. You know, and I am telling you, there is going to need to be significant discussion because teachers are raising many issues. I have had the conversations. These are informed, intelligent conversations. They raise the issue of that you raised, of the hotspot zip codes. They raise issues of contact tracing. They raise issues of testing. And they have to be comfortable. I don't think it's going to be, you don't want to get into a legal battle about it. You know, it's not going to work that way. Operator, let's take one more. Thank you, Melissa.
Yes, your last question comes from the line of Andrew Donovan from News Channel 9. Your line is now open.
Hi, Governor. How are you?
Good. How are you, Andrew?
We'll need to get you some Gianelli sausage since the state fair is off. But back to the topic of schools. I know you've talked a lot about testing throughout this entire process. You've led the nation on that front. But testing was not initially part of the school reopening guidance to schools. The state ed department almost didn't specify, it said directly not to schools to test within their own jurisdiction. So I'm wondering why that's all of a sudden a late shift in the strategy, and should schools partner with their health departments? Who pays for the testing? What can you tell me and tell these administrators about this late shift where testing sounds like it needs to be part of their reopening?
Yeah, two things, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Malatras to join in. First, there are two separate state education department, SED, from Department of Health. You're referring to the SED guidance. I have nothing to do with SED. It's run by the Board of Regents. So you'd have to talk to them about what they did. Department of Health guidance did reference testing. But where testing is coming up, Andrew, is from the local school district's plans. Because the local school district's plans bring up testing. If you look at the plans, most of them will say, we're going to do this, 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 and then we're going to take a temperature of a student. And if the student has a temperature, then they go into the isolation room. That then triggers Dan Clark's question, how about asymptomatic spread? The student never had a temperature. Good question. But student had a temperature, they go into the isolation room, they then get tested. Oh, they get tested. How? Where? Let's say it's not one student. The school has 1,000 students. How many students in a morning will have a temperature if you have 1,000 students? Let's take a guess. 50? 25? Okay, those students go into an isolation room, and then they have to get tested. How do we test those students? Does the parent have to test them? Do they get tested at school? Do you need the parent's permission to test them? Do you call up the city to test them? How do you test those students? These are questions coming up in the plan themselves. And most plans reference testing. And that's where it came from. But I'm going to ask Jim to chime in.
That's exactly right, Governor. The DOH guidance requires, you know, for symptomatic students, that a testing plan be in place for those schools. But on the screening piece of asymptomatic and other students, schools can must develop protocols and procedures for mandatory health screenings that could include testing and other things, but it must, as a baseline, include temperature checks in all plans. So testing has been part of many of the district's plans on screening side, and it is required on testing of symptomatic students and others within a district.
If my line is still open, one district has expressed to me concern that they've been told HIPAA means local health departments cannot name the students who do test positive, making it hard to quarantine a full class as required. What's the expectation of health departments locally communicating to school districts about who in those buildings or buses needs to quarantine?
This program, this has to work with the contact tracing program. There's also already been several examples of this happening across the state. One recent example in Westchester County where there was a positive result of a teacher's aide, which resulted in testing of the entire classroom and then isolation of those students. While you can still protect the students' name and identification, it can be worked out with the local health department through the contact tracing program, as well as the testing, subsequent testing, regardless of, like in many other cases, where you can still protect student privacy while also conduct testing and other things to keep the classroom safe.
Yeah. Remember, Andrew, we do this. This is the essence of contact tracing all across the board, right? HIPAA isn't just for children. HIPAA is for everyone. And contact tracing is we can protect your identity and privacy, but we can use the information to protect others. Okay. Just remember the context here for this conversation, please. The state says, here's the viral infection rate. Thank God in this state we can authorize all schools to reopen given the viral infection rate. It then turns to them and their plan. They can do in-person school, but it is up to them. In-person, hybrid, outdoor education, remote education, a blend, half day, quarter day, third day, that is all up to their discretion. The main questions that have been asked, contact tracing, separate plan, get it up, testing, separate plan, get it up, and remote learning, and how do you fix what we learned from the first place, mandatory, if you will, discussions with parents, at least 3-5 in the big school districts between now and August 21, and at least one session just with teachers because we need the parents and the teachers. Ventilation systems, all these questions have to be brought up and discussed on a local level. But, again, it's good news. If any state can do this, we can do this, not just because of our infection rate, but because we've been smarter than any other state as a people in dealing with this. And I believe in New Yorkers, and New Yorkers can do it. And New Yorkers will decide what they want to do and how they want to do it, school district by school district. Thank you all very much. Have a good day.